we have no idea what science really is. We only know that the science we're exposed to is fake. And that's what I would circle back around to. Again, a point you just kind of made in passing was that this is the reveal of the extent of the conspiracy. It's now just in your face. It's like, yeah, we've been playing you, you know? Okay, get over it.
Hey everybody, it's your boy Isaac. I'm very excited. I got a special guest for you today. We're joined by a very, very special guest. Alex Sakiris from the Skeptico podcast. Yes, that's a Greek last name. And we get into that in the show real briefly. And if you're not familiar with my man Alex, oh boy, if you got a whole world that's about to open up in front of you, he's got this podcast, Skeptico, where he goes hard in the paint, to say the least. He's going ham on the consciousness stuff. But he breaks down some very controversial ideas with us today, so, you know, get ready. Strap in and strap on, you know what I'm saying? We're going to talk about the big virus. We're going to talk about masks. But more importantly, we're going to talk about the alien agenda, the global government, the Great Reset, the myth that he says started Christianity. His words, not mine. I'm clutching my pearls as we speak. He says Christianity is a big lie, and so much more. We discuss, hey, you know, maybe Alex Jones was right all along. We talk about how science is a religion, a failed religion at that. This guy's going hard against the nerds, the Christians, you name it. And it's a lively discussion, let me tell you. We talk about, we both interviewed Dana Pasulka. We talk about Dana Pasulka, her alien revelation to the masses about the Invisible College, the disclosure agenda, consciousness, near-death experiences, and more. We get a little personal. I hit him up and say, Alex, bro, you were a member of the Greek Orthodox Church. That's my faith right there. Why did you leave, bro? Why did you leave? And he tells you why. You're talking about conflicts with all these Christians he's got. He had Jay Dyer on the show. We talk about Jay Dyer for a little bit. Truth or drama alert. Talk about how Alex believes that Christianity was built around the myth of a man named Josephus. We talk about this whole thing for a bit. And we wrap up with a brief discussion on whether or not aliens are demonic. You know the answer. They are. Come on. Come on. You know they are. Maybe not. Who knows? And I'm going to keep this moving. I know you. I'm excited to get into the show. Real quick, we're going to do the Patreon December Tier 2 and up shout outs. Let's get into it. My man, Frank. Chow, Chris, O's Blues, King Switchy, Liz, Cheryl, Michael C, Marjorie G, Dana, Premier 65, Christy W, Joe Sauce in the house, Laura Susie, Jorge, almost said George there. That's my gringo cracker ass cracker. And by the way, this episode with Alex, we got a couple explicit lyrics, so, you know, if you got the little ones nearby and you want to earmuff them, you might have to be on standby for that. Yes, where were we? Jorge, Chris, Keisha, Daniel. And if I'm butchering your name, you know, hit me up. Slide in those Patreon DMs and let me know. Maybe I'm mispronouncing it, or maybe I missed you entirely. I shouldn't. I got all the names right here. Where were we? Keisha, Daniel G, Renata G, Zach, Russell D, Chris G, Ramona Frankenstein, coolest name ever, Elena, Jason, Lewis B, Rosalinda, Irock, Tanya, Raymond, Trey, Aya, Jacob, Alan, Annalisa, Phil Goodrich art, pumping out them paintings. He's pumping out the UFO and the surfboard paintings. You know you want one. Check him out at Phil Goodrich art on Instagram. Eric, Jason S, Meechild, Peter, Alexander K, Suze W, Anonymous, Francie, Betty, Thomas, Don P, Elizabeth, Roxy, Angie Porter, Brian. Brian's been on here for a minute, damn near. Oh, Brian's hit the 1 year mark, I think, if I'm reading this right. Shout out, Brian. Ashton, Ashley G, Kelly C, Heather, Jade M, Allie, Renee, Brandon and Naya. He's been on here for a minute too. CC, all these are OGs right here. Spry Ute, out there in Utah doing his weird Utah football polygamous stuff, whatever he does down there, I don't know. We have some lively tweeters going on there if you follow us on the Twitter. Joe N, Brandon Lord, Ryan B, Roachcast, Yak, David, M. Gibb, I Will See. I Will See's been on here for a minute. Shout out. Darcy. All these people have been on here for a month. Jeff W. Ale. Whitney B. Prophet 7. Denali G. Jade. Pragmatic Chick. SPG. Oh, these are... We're going back in the old school Patreon supporters here. William B. Alexandria H. Katie G. J. Poe in the house. And then here we go with Tier 3. These are Tier 3 supporters, Joshua B, Austin C, Southside Taro in the house in his little, what do you call that thing, the little teepee, hitting that opium hash or whatever you guys do out there, getting your hippie rainbow club on, getting that rainbow light body, Sarah B, Jennifer, Cheryl S in the house, always holding down, Cheryl's holding down all the time, Crystal D, Taylor Blake, always holding down, Big Fezzy, reigning champ still. Reigning champ of Patreon. Kara, Charles, Brooke, Sorcha, and last but definitely not least, my man, Brandon C. So that's the Patreon shoutouts. So shout out to everyone who supports. Shout out for the people listening. I appreciate all you guys. You make this happen. Without further ado, let's get into this show.
Alex, what's going on, man?
Hey, Isaac, love it.
Man, I'm great to hook up with you. I'm so happy. I've heard a few episodes of your show, right? Before you were even on Sam Tripoli's Daily Dose, I'm obviously familiar with your work. When I interviewed Dr. Diana Pasulka, I was kind of doing a little recon on her, and I stumbled across your show, and your show had hit my radar a bunch of times because of all the topics and the terms you have on your titles and all that. So I'm stoked that you are here ready to drop the knowledge on me.
How about Diana Walsh Pasulka? Fucking next level.
I'm telling you, man, I had these sort of ideas swirling around in my head for a while about the alien agenda. And then I read her book.
Are we back?
And yeah, can you hear me? On your end?
Oh, okay. No, you froze for a minute.
Yeah, and that's why.
No, but I wanted to get your answer. What about Pasulka?
Yeah, I find her to be incredibly, she seems almost so credible and believable because of her credentials, but then also almost like she's the disinterested third party on some levels. And I don't know, man, this whole, and we'll talk about this today, the whole alien agenda and the disclosure, is it a psyop, are they demons, are they angels, all these ideas are part of the big picture, I think, of what's going on.
Hey, do you realize, I mean, in my view, how profound that point is that you just made? Because no one else, or not, I shouldn't say no one, because I just talked to Alexis Brooks, who I really like and respect, but not enough people are saying, well, of course we have to consider the exopolitical aspect of this. You know, the aliens got a seat on the table, right? Ever since we let them into the conversation and said there is this, we are after disclosure, we are post-disclosure, we can't have any discussion and not say, what is the non-human intelligence? What is that angle? Even if we say, well, we have no idea what it is, it hasn't revealed itself as to what it thinks about COVID, you still have to kind of carve out a little space there and go, well, is that a factor in this, right? Because just like, man, I'm really that, you know, you said that after you did your show yesterday on The Great Reset, which was like fantastic. I'm listening to it. It's amazing. And you said you're shaking. I was shaking listening to your show because you were like red pilling me all over the place. But I still catch myself and say, okay, so what does ET think about that, right? Because I'm just saying, we just got to check ourselves. Like, okay, what does ET think? Well, we don't know. Okay, why don't we know? You know what I mean, or no?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that, man, with 2020, the ideas of the Great Awakening, then sort of confirming so many conspiracy theories through the Great Reset, that to me, if you were to nail me down and say what's the deal with the aliens, how does it fit into everything going on, if I had to make a guess, I would say that if the I hate using these terms too much because I don't want to get flagged for censorship, but if the virus and the rollout of the cure through the needles, if those things aren't accepted by the masses, which the jury's a little bit out on whether or not they will be, if they're not accepted by the masses to push us into the globalist agenda of the Great Reset, then like Ronald Reagan told us 40 years ago, guess what will get that done? The alien threat, the alien agenda. And there's nuances of this, right? I read through some of your material there, and there's weird tie-ins with the military-industrial complex. There's weird tie-ins with Tom DeLonge. I mean, the disclosure thing is just bizarro, and it is weird how very few people are really talking about this.
You know, I had an interview a few years ago with the guy. Really like this guy, and he's highly respected in academia and political science circles. His name is Dr. Alexander Wendt from Ohio State University. And so he did a couple of papers that, you know, were really, really controversial within the academic community. And for you and I, it'd just be like, yeah, I mean, right. But one was about one world governance, New World Order kind of thing. And this is Alexander Wendt, Ohio State University, poli-sci, published in a peer-reviewed journal. And his big insight that he had in the shower one day is one world government. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that is the trend, right? I mean, we go back in history and we have all these little fiefdoms and all these little states and tribes, and then they consolidate in order to protect and exert their power, but also for economic reasons. And the natural extension of that is you get fewer and fewer, there's more and more consolidation, and eventually there's one world state. So again, this guy's coming at it from strictly poli-sci perspective, but he's just saying we do have to look at it from this bigger picture. Of course, one world state is the eventual outcome. And he also has an exopolitical angle that he kind of treads very lightly on, but it's like, okay, if we are part of a larger galactic community of, well, you know, you can't really come down to Earth and have, you know, 20 different groups that you're dealing with. You kind of need one would kind of be better than 20 in that circumstance. Again, I'm not saying that I know any of this stuff, but there's some really smart people who are thinking the same way. And then where I would take that with what you're exploring is, okay, so maybe these guys who are, quote, in the know, who we perceive as super evil, doing all these horrible reset things, maybe there's another perspective on it that we don't fully appreciate. And that doesn't mean I'm down with what they're doing at all. I'm just saying maybe it looks a little bit different from, you know, Schwab's perspective. I love that one. You know, you lay that whole thing. If anyone hasn't heard yesterday's show, it was yesterday to me, whatever it was. They got it. But the way you did that intro was just like, I'm just like, I was stunned. I was like, who are these quotes coming from? It's one after another. It's this kind of thing where if you had any doubt that this was not a programmed frickin' rollout, explain where those came from, if you would, for my benefit.
Sure, yeah. So those are like part of the... So you've got the World Economic Forum, which is one of these sort of, you know... You know, Jay Dyer breaks this down pretty well. Like, it's like a specter from James Bond. It's this, you know, octopus umbrella group that is the the globalist elites. And you've got people on the intro I did for that show there, like Prince Charles and stuff. And like, you know, these are people who like why are we listening to Prince Charles? Like Prince Charles is going to tell us how to equitably treat humanity. Like, this is the guy who we put on a pedestal to live in a palace in this fake royal bloodline stuff. And to me, it's the whole thing is just so preposterous. And I listened to, and to be honest, and I think I cover this on the show, I obviously have heard of the Great Reset for many months from the Truther community, but I'm kind of a skeptical guy myself of the Truthers, particularly because, you know, and I get it. The Truther worldview is very paranoid. It's very much question everything. No one's telling you the truth. Extra paranoid. And it shocks me how often they turn out to be correct, but I'm always on the fence and hesitant to just, you know, slide all my chips in and be like, yep, they're right. This is a globalist agenda. And, you know, because I'm like, well, on one hand, there's viruses. They exist. This happens. But then, like, I read this stuff and I listen to Jay Dyer and I listen to, there was a couple other people I listened to about the Great Reset, Bill Cooper, you know, and, dude, these guys are so on the money with it. And I think when you first hear it, I think this is like some fear mongering right wing nonsense. But then I read Klaus Schwab's books and the way they package the material, that's what's insidious to me because I've got like some bleeding heart tendencies and Klaus Schwab is like, he promotes it very well in the books. He's very convincing. You're kind of like, I don't know, this doesn't sound so bad. What, we're going to take care of the earth? We're going to take care of poor people? This isn't bad. But then like you think about all the truthers for so many years that have been warning us of this and the real intentions behind it, like, and you could talk me to either side of it, but I go with my gut on this where I'm like, look, I don't trust the people. You know, Bill Gates became the world's richest man for a reason, and what, we're going to pretend he's this great humanitarian all of a sudden? Like, give me a break.
See, that's what I really appreciated about what you were doing, because I felt like it was, you were capturing where I was at. You know, like, sure, I've heard the Great Reset for months, and I always kind of pushed it to the side of kind of a little bit too cute, a little bit too way out there, you know, moony kind of right wing, you know, because we all know we love Alex Jones, but we know those clickbait, fear mongering, prepper shit is not exactly where we want to live on a day to day basis. So we kind of have a leery eye on that. But like you said in that thing, when you encounter it to that level, you go, holy shit, what if he's the one who's been telling me the truth all along? What if it really is that bad that I never even wanted to imagine? Because I think people like you and I who are in this community but are trying to find this middle ground are hesitant, reticent to go that whole way. And when someone kind of pulls you in that direction, you're like, oh man, I know it, because we know it. Because we know what they're talking about. We know there's some evidence for it. We're not like when you talk to, you know, people in the larger community, like I talk to a lot of science people, and they are completely asleep, you know, completely asleep. So the conversation only crawls, you know, one bit or another. You and I have a conversation and boom, you know, we're immediately off talking about exopolitical alien Tom DeLonge versus, you know, the truth behind, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a different kind of discussion, but I think it's this is a cool discussion to have, which is that kind of next level within this reality-centered conspiracy thing. You get what I mean?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and to add to that point about how the scientific community is asleep to the higher picture, what you mentioned earlier about the aliens and how that's really the spirituality element isn't really discussed in the community at all. When I interviewed Dr. Dana Pasalka, I think she was referring to Tyler, you know, who was like the main sort of point of contact in that invisible college. And I don't quote me, but I think it was Tyler who didn't know who John Dee was. He had no idea. And I'm like, this is a scientist who believes in UFOs and aliens, and he doesn't even know who John Dee is. Like, that blows my mind, you know? And I think you're right. And I think a lot of people in the masses have turned to the truther community this year. I mean, I've talked to many truthers and there's insatiable need. I mean, the consumption level of my materials, my books, my podcast has gone, you know, 2-3-fold this year because, you know, you can only fool people for so long. That's why, like, today I retweeted something about YouTube shut down another big channel in the truther community there. And you know, the writing's on the wall to me that I think enough people can see through all the censorship and they're waking up to this. And I don't think you're going to fool all the people. I think you can fool some of them, but not all of them. And your podcast does a good service for this too. And I like how you sort of force people to like dig deeper and not, you don't just take what people say and be like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, that's a thing. You know, like, I like how, like, we got to force our people to think is what I'm getting at. You know what I mean? Because if we don't think, if we don't question some of the truther communities, that dilutes the genuine truth in a lot of these, a lot of these circles that we run in. And I don't like that as a big picture. I don't like that.
Can't have it. It doesn't work. It ultimately doesn't work. I mean, truth is truth. You have to seek it, even if it's among your bros who are being under attack. You still have to call them out and say, no, that's not it. You know, I want to circle back to the Diana Walsh-Pasulka kind of thing, because I did not realize you did an interview with her. So now I'm really curious to go back and listen to that one and see how you guys handled it. My interview with her was just, for me, phenomenal for me, for my own education, because she is, as we were chatting about, you know, she is buttoned down, proper chairman of her department, tenured professor at a major university in the religious studies department. So she knows how to play that game, and she's super smart. But you just like threw out a little morsel there, because we're comfortable with this stuff. But you talked about the invisible college kind of thing, which is a term that Jacques Vallée originally, I don't know if he was the original one, but he kind of popularized it. And this idea that there is a group of academics, intellectuals with inside of academia that are privy to and are kind of playing a different game. And Diana Walsh-Pasulka just completely reveals that. And that's one of the things I brought up in her interview. I go, you realize you are completely validating and exposing that right in front of our eyes. And she does. And I think Tyler is actually the guy who's the Gucci clad, you know, orders a Uber private jet kind of thing. And her other guy, I forget his name, is the researcher, the academic type that comes along with her. And he's the guy who exposes her to the invisible college, where he's doing his job and, like, out of the movies, gets like a note that says, you know, show up here at this time and you will be initiated, you know, and he goes there and it's a bunch of academics academics of different disciplines who say, okay, here's how it works. You're now in the group. Here's what we talk about. Here's how we talk about it. This is Fight Club. First rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club, but we're on it, you know. And then she further validates it. Again, this is Diana Walsh-Pasulka, Dr. Diana Walsh-Pasulka, trusted, you know, she's telling it like it is. The book is American Cosmic. She goes, she's at a conference and some guy stands up and asks a question, you know, a very direct question. And another guy across the room stands up and goes, you know, we're not supposed to be talking about, this is a public forum. This is, you know, like, dude, you're breaking the Fight Club rule kind of thing. So you just touched on it when you said, you know, science. I mean, we have no idea what science really is. We only know that the science we're exposed to is fake. And that's what I would circle back around to. Again, a point you just kind of made in passing was that this is the reveal of the extent of the conspiracy. It's now just in your face. It's like, yeah, we've been playing you, you know, okay, get over it. I think that's also true with regard to science when it comes to the plandemic. I mean, it's just kind of out there now. It's like, look, we don't need science. We don't need a scientific board. We don't need peer review. We will just dictate what the science is. You know, you did a show on masks, right? Uh-huh. The efficacy of masks. And I've looked into that science. I have a very different opinion of it, because I believe what the science shows pretty clearly is that the efficacy of masks for virus and bacterial infections is something that's been looked at for years. I mean, there's a lot of research on this. There's a good meta data on it, where research compiles to more research, more research. They've looked at it in hospitals for the longest time. And what they see is a divide between laboratory tests and clinical tests. So, yes, you can show that in a lab, a mask of a certain type can prevent the exchange of viral things and bacterial things at some distance. But every time they've tried to test it in a clinical setting, be it in a hospital or be it in the general population, the efficacy drops. It isn't effective because, for all the reasons we know, people don't wear the mask properly. They don't put it on properly. They're not wearing the mask that they was recommended by the trial. So the point being, there is absolutely none of the kind of scientific-based evidence we would normally rely on for public policy changes like we've seen. And that's a long, long way of my rant. But coming back and saying, we are post-science here. Science is no longer, I mean, climate change kind of opened the door to it. It is that we don't really have to prove any of this stuff. We can just lay it out as an edict, and you just got to do what we say.
Yes. Now, to rebuttal the mask thing, when I recorded my mask show, since then I've learned a lot more. And in fact, I'm actually sort of compiling to do another sort of discussion on it. And I'm with you 100%. When you look at if you look at the actual recommendations, like the World Health Organization, the CDC put out the laundry list of requirements to suggest that maybe they're effective. It's like all these things that nobody in the masses is going to do. I mean, this is like in a perfect world and a perfect environment. Like you said, there's a difference between a lab test and then reality. And that's kind of what changed. I talked to one of my doctors that I have a few doctors I kind of see for different things, and I trust him a lot. And he kind of broke it down to me in a way that made a lot of sense. And he, long story short, said what you just said. He said, look, they can't take a lab study with controlled settings and then apply it to the real world. All they can do is look at counties that have mask mandates and the counties right next to it that don't have mask mandates and see what the rates are. But even with that, you've got a host of other variables and factors that you need to eliminate, and you can only eliminate in a lab. It's sort of a catch-22, and it goes on and on. So now I'm kind of more on the anti-mask side of the house now than I used to be. Anyway, yeah. Long story short, I agree with you on that.
I agree. Look, big step back. No, kudos to you. For this is what we're talking about, Isaac, is like what I advocate for in the most strong way is the process, because it really is about the process. If we can't go through the process, and I could have come out wrong on this, right? Because I'm wrong like so much of the time, and people correct me, and even people who listen to the show correct me. But it's the process. You were able to discern by talking to really trusted sources, by sorting out stuff that you found, by looking at different studies and all the rest of that. Man, that's what it's freaking, that's the only way we're going to be able to figure this stuff out going forward, because the push is to not do that, to do just the exact opposite of that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're talking about a subject that's really interesting about how we're in the post-science world, and it sounds like you're essentially saying there's a new religion in town, and this is the dogma, and okay, the scientist says it, therefore it must be true. And I've always had beef with that. I've graduated, I've got several degrees in science, and my whole beef with the scientific community is it always disproves itself over time. And I'm like, how do you trust anything these people say? I mean, I like to use it as a tool, and I think it's better than just going off of a gut feeling. But like, I always sort of question a lot of the studies and the ideas that come out, because you don't know who funded it. You don't know the settings they used. There's a lot of deception in the scientific community, and boy, it really makes you think about everything. And I go back to, you know, and I'm talking to you today because you've got a new book coming out, right? And your previous book, it was titled "Why Science Is Wrong About Almost Everything." You wrote that several years ago, very prophetically. why are you picking on these nerds, Alex? Come on, man.
Let me explain to people where I was going with that, because, and I, you'll get this, and most people do once I explain it to them, is that the big question for me when I started the podcast, because I was just kind of a business guy. That was my thing, you know, just making the almighty dollar and getting to the point where I could, you know, step back and say, okay, how do I answer these questions if I have the time and the opportunity to do it? So my first inclination was to answer the biggest, who am I, why am I here, by looking to science. And I pretty quickly figured out that that question, from a scientific standpoint, boils down to a question of consciousness. You know, that little voice inside our head, the minute-by-minute experience we have. And what I found is that science is extremely dogmatic, very firm in their understanding of what consciousness is. That essentially consciousness is an illusion. It is an epiphenomenon of the brain. So they dance around and say, oh, it's then they got kind of hammered on that. And they said, well, it's an emergent property of the brain. But they never kind of define what the constituent elements of that emergent property would be. Ultimately, they always come down to the same conclusion. You are your brain. You are a product of that biological robot that is in your head. You don't really exist. We can talk about morals as a social construct, something we can all agree on or not agree on, but there's no reality to anything that you consider this consciousness. So I'm kind of going on. The point of the book, Why Science is Wrong, is that that's an absurd idea. That's ridiculous. It's philosophically ridiculous. No culture throughout time has ever believed that you don't exist, that your conscious experience doesn't exist. That's the fundamental thing that we all know. You know that you're in there. I know that I'm in here. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you're there. You could be a robot. You could be AI, but I know I'm in here. That's the only thing I really know. So science, to do this kind of in your face, you are not really in there, Isaac. It's just your brain neuron firing. There isn't really a you in there. It was an absurd idea to begin with philosophically, but experimentally, it's been falsified over and over and over again. And I always point this out to people, you know, most people who are science-oriented are familiar with the double-slit experiment way back 100 years ago, where these guys, you know, shot the little photon, and does it come out as a beam or a wave? And what a lot of people forget, because again, this stuff gets papered over so that people don't see it for what it is, that was a consciousness experiment. I mean, they were interested in photon beams and whether they form a pattern or a wave. What they really wanted to know was whether this thing that they call the observer effect was real, whether consciousness was a part of that experiment. And what they found conclusively is that consciousness affects that experiment, and by extension, consciousness affects every experiment. Probably because consciousness is fundamental. Consciousness is at the root of everything. But leave that aside. Again, from a geeky science perspective that I like to keep it at, science is wrong about almost everything because it's wrong about consciousness. Because once you do that double-slit consciousness experiment and you go, okay, the whole thing hinges on whether there's an observer. The tree falls in the forest, whether there's someone there to observe it. Now, every experiment has an asterisk by it and says, well, did we factor in consciousness? You know what I mean? Right. So we can still go on and build our iPhones and do all that stuff. but we should, in the back of our mind, have a little question is, have we factored in consciousness?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what drew me into a lot of this red pill talk and David Icke and stuff, was because when I was in college, I took a course, Intro to Philosophy, as many people do. And at the time, I believe it was the third Matrix film was released, and it blew my freaking mind. And I was reading all these philosophy books and reading. I've got a book on the philosophies of the Matrix, and it's very fascinating stuff. But like, what that film will lead you to believe is in like Descartes' evil genius idea, and it's like, oh, you can just sort of put the brain in a vat and put, you know, signals into it, and you might never know. You might be just living in some virtual reality. But I think even with that, you would still have to support the idea that, yeah, but like, I'm think, like Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Like, your thoughts are coming from somewhere, and I agree with you, man. I think there's a consciousness out there, and this might be where you get into some of the occult philosophies of life. And like I always say, like, I find them fascinating. It's not my belief system, but I think they do get some of this stuff right. And it's fascinating that they've been right for hundreds of years, much like I believe the Christian faith is. But you know, the title of your new book, Why Evil Matters, How Science and Religion Fumbled a Big One, begs the question about the religion element, which is one of the things I want to talk to you about. From what I read, you grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church. So to me, I think, okay, this is a perfect example because I'm actually Greek Orthodox myself.
And really?
Yeah. Tikhanis.
Kala.
Fair still. Yeah. So I think, okay, this is, but I grew up in a, sort of non-denominational church, and it didn't really ever speak to me. It didn't really resonate with my soul, and God knows why. I don't know why. It just didn't. And I hated it. I hated church. They always told me what to do, and they shamed all the things that I liked. And not to say that like the Orthodox Church is like, oh, cool, you like doing all this rotten stuff? Go for it, Isaac. Like, that's not the way it is either. But and maybe I'm just older now and I have a different perspective. But I wanted to hear your take on it, man. Like, what's your take on religion? The vibes I get are, you know, a little bit like, oh, you know, Satan's a fabrication a little bit, maybe. What's your take on Satan? What's your take on religion? How does this fit into things? Where could I be wrong on this?
Well, it's super complicated, and I love that you brought it up. I mean, you're just brave. You just go these places that most people don't want to go. And I do have to say, and the kind of, you know, as preparing for this and listening, and I had heard you before, and I kind of stumbled across your stuff, but I hadn't really listened to a lot of it. And then I read your book. Or at least I have to say, I'm gonna read it, but you know, we're all swamped with so much reading material, but The Dark Path, I kind of read the intro on Amazon. I was really blown away. It is the most concise, kind of direct, easy to read explanation of what we're all talking about when we talk about Illuminati and all the qualifications you have. Well, it's kind of this, but it's kind of just a metaphor for this. It's kind of just holding in place, you know, an idea. And don't get too hung up with particular people and particular events. And kind of the reason I bring that up is that's how I see religion. So a couple of things to really dive in to give it some meat is, number one, I was very influenced by the near-death experience science. So, pardon me. So I told you, you know, I wrote that book, Why Science is Wrong, because I was really geeking out on the science and talking to, you know, neuroscientists, debating them, talking to psychologists, debating them, talking to parapsychologists, talking to a lot of different people in the science realm. But pretty quickly when I figured out that the game is really about consciousness, I said, what really answers that question is this whole body of science called near-death experience. And I say science because a lot of people, you know, they think it's not science. It's like, man, there's over 200 peer-reviewed papers on near-death experience. And when I started interviewing the leading researchers, they're top-notch people. You know, they're people who are really, really well known in their field of being medical researchers as well as practitioners. You know, Pen von Lommel, one of the most respected cardiologists, teaches at a university. You know, Dr. Jeff Long down in Louisiana, you know, radiation oncologist and scientist. These guys are not slouches, you know, and they're doing this research. The net of that research, near-death experience research, is not very kind to Christianity as we know it. It's super kind and welcoming to the idea of a hierarchy of consciousness, of a moral imperative, if you will, a right and wrong, a God. It's super welcoming to the idea of a Christ consciousness, that people are dead, and I say dead, and I emphasize it because by every measure we have clinically, people are no longer alive. They're dead. It shouldn't even be called a near-death experience. A lot of researchers will tell you that. It should be called a death experience, unless we want to come up with some totally never before understood definition of what death is. A lot of these people are dead for, 20, 30 minutes. There is no record we have in all the neurological research that there would be anything like consciousness happening inside that brain thing. So immediately, that's why I was drawn to it, is because it gets to this question of consciousness and it answers it just completely. It's like, no, there's something that's happening after the brain is no longer functioning in a way that we normally understand. So that question, the first question about consciousness, is answered. But I think it also answers that second question, which is, we have to look deeper than religion. Religion is, the other term I often use is, you know, disintermediation. You know, when the internet first hit, what it was all about from a business standpoint was taking out the middleman, disintermediation. You don't need the middleman. You can go right to, you know, Geico and buy your insurance. That's what we need in spirituality. You don't need some fucking guy standing up there. You and I, Greek Orthodox Church, that motherfucker's standing up there. I got to go up and kiss his hand to get a fucking piece of bread for the... I don't know. What the fuck does he know? I can go directly to the source that is being revealed, and I don't even know what it is. I don't have to make any firm conclusions about what it is. I can access. There is some extended consciousness realm. There seems to be some hierarchy to it. So there is, for lack of a better term, there seems to be a God. And I can go directly to it. And we all know we can go directly to it because we already have a ton of practice doing that throughout our life. I think religion just gets in the way. And I think our history tells us that it is super prone to manipulation, abuse, and just all the same kind of crap that we see in every other institution that wants to pat us on the head and say, it's okay, let me take care of you.
So in response, I will say, I think that, I would view that when I talk about kissing the priest's hand and organized religion in general, right? I don't think you necessarily have to subscribe to, you know, go to the church in order to go to heaven. I think that much like the icons that we venerate, right? It's a veneration. It's a traditional element. It's a respect towards God. And I would just say that, you know, kissing the priest's hand to get the piece of bread, you know, that's in that same ballpark. You know, it's like, you know, you put your nice dress on to go to church. It's a respect thing. Now, I am with you on the idea of when you get into organized groupings, then you've got lots of elements that can get out of hand. Look at the Catholic Church, for instance, you know, with all the hiding of the child abuse stuff. You know, because man is fallible, of course. To talk about, and let me go back to the NDEs. I have a close friend who died, and I've actually talked to him about this, and I called it an NDE, and he said, no, he corrects me. He says, no, I died. I literally died. So that's funny you say that. But he kind of relayed the same experience that all the others have, you know, this whole idea of like, he felt his consciousness sort of thing going out into the ether and light, intense light, all that stuff. And to me, I think, well, I don't know that NDEs disprove the idea that God created us, we die on our souls or consciousness or whatever we want to call this, can go to a place of light or a place of darkness afterward. Because I'm always in the camp of, like I say with the aliens, I feel like they're more interdimensional than anything, where, you know, your consciousness shifts and slips dimensions, and when you die, your consciousness is just going wherever it's going. And my buddy, by the way, who died, near-death experience, whatever you want to call it, he's actually an atheist now. So what do I make of all that? I don't know. Sounds like you guys went on similar journeys in some levels, maybe. But what do you think about evil? There's a lot of material in this new book devoted to the idea of questioning who is Satan, what is evil. What's your take? I mean, I know that's a big subject to take a bite out of.
Okay. Well, let me return back to it, because we'll get Bible geeky for a minute, you know, because you're open to it, and I appreciate that. You know, you're not like rolling over and agreeing, and you got your opinions, and you should, you know. Shit, if I could change your mind that easily, I'd be worried about you. So one of the chapters in the book is this interview that I've interviewed this guy a bunch of times. I just have so much respect, so much love for Joe Atwell. Guy wrote a book called Caesar's Messiah. And Joe and I, on some level, kind of disagree about this God thing, you know, that we're talking about, and about consciousness. And he's more of the humanist / atheist type, although whenever I push him, he always says, no, but he is. But his work is fundamental to this. I had Jay Dyer on my show, and Jay was stopped in his tracks. I don't understand. Jay, I'm inviting him back. He doesn't want to come back because he doesn't want to face this shit. There's one key figure, historical figure, that every Christian should totally focus on. It's Josephus. So do you know who Josephus is?
No. Tell me more.
The claim of Josephus. So most Christian apologists, right? So, you know, the Christian apologetics has been going on for hundreds of years, but really in the last 50 years, when the skeptical people back in the 90s and 2000s, and they had the bus, you know, Richard Dawkins and those guys and stuff like that, they really challenged, they were a challenge to Christianity, and Christianity got on its horse and said, we need to present a logic-based, reason-based counter to this, and it's going to be apologetics, you know, it's going to be, we found this, and we went and studied this ancient text, and it tells us this, and it tells us that. So most people get really Bible geeky on that. They'll point to Josephus as a trusted historical source that proves that Jesus did exist, because Josephus wrote this famous paragraph that gets passage in his book that says, yeah, you know, what's going on, man? We killed this Jesus guy, and all the people are still, you know, worshiping him, and we don't know what to do, kind of thing. Well, the real story of Josephus is much, much, much more interesting. And we can't cover it all, but I'm going to hit some of the high points. The first thing I direct people to do is go look for the Ark of Titus and Google that. And the cool thing about that is it's real. It's physical. You can see this big arch that they built. And the Romans built it because they went and kicked ass in Judea. Those fucking Jews were on their butt for the longest time. They couldn't control them, you know. They had all their other groups, and they could basically get them in line. A lot of them had stepped out of line. But man, the Jews were just a pain for them. So when they finally, in like 61, 63 AD, go over there and kick ass on them and destroy the temple and all that for the first time, they come and they build this big arch. And on the arch, like, you can go to Google and you can zoom in. Like, this thing still exists. It's archaeologically dated to that time. They show the Roman soldiers carrying, you know, the big stuff out of the Jewish church, you know, forgetting the name, but, you know, all those relics that show the Star of David and stuff like that. They show them hauling out all that gold, you know, like, woohoo, we got all our loot out of there. So that battle, that ass kicking that the Romans did, is chronicled by Josephus. Josephus writes the book, The War of the Jews. And this, a lot of historians will tell you, is the history. It's how we know that this really happened. What every Christian needs to do is take the next step and go and find out who Josephus is. First of all, as Joe Atwell points out, when you hear the story of Josephus, I'll kind of hint at the end of the movie like you sometimes do before you get there, but Josephus is a fictional character. He's invented by the Romans. But let's pretend for a minute he's not. Here's who the history claims he is. He's this Jewish rabbi living in Galilee, living the good life. He's been to Rome. He loves Rome. He thinks it's great. But he's back, and he's a general. So he has both the religious credentials, and he's also a general. He's like a highfalutin guy in Galilee. Doesn't that name sound familiar? So the Romans, and this is history now. I'm not making this stuff. This is like our accepted history of the time period. So the Romans show up, and Josephus goes out there, and he's battling with his sword. And finally, him and his band of brothers get pushed into a cave. This is Josephus' account. And there were 40 of us in our cave, and we're going to fight to the death, and we realized we're all going to die, so we began committing suicide. And we had this way of kind of selecting who would be killed. And it finally got down to me and two others. And then I had a revelation that I should not commit suicide. And the revelation was that everything I had learned about my Judaism was false, and that the real Messiah was Caesar. Caesar is the Messiah. And that therefore this should be the new news of Judaism. Again, folks, you think I'm making this up. This is what is recorded in Josephus's writing. This, when our friend, and I like Jay Gyer, and I think he does fantastic stuff, and his Hollywood stuff, his movie stuff is great. But when I reminded Jay of this, he was like, how do you not know that? Every Christian should know that the guy who you're relying on for the history was at this point, if you don't see this guy as a complete tool of the Romans, I mean, come on, you know, in the cave, can't kill himself. And then he goes on. So here's the next part of the story, as unbelievable as it is. So he comes out of the cave and says, okay, whoa, I see it now. You're the Messiah. So Caesar just wraps his arm around and says, all right, buddy, come along with me. You're going to record this battle that we're in. You're going to write it all down.
Give him a publishing deal.
Yeah, a publishing deal. I'll tell you what we can do. That is our history. Now he goes on, and what Joe Atwell, to his unbelievable credit, for a one guy, you know, it's kind of this one man changes the world. All these biblical scholars, and Isaac, I've interviewed so many of them on the show, you know, well-credentialed, you know, Gary Habermas, Mike Heiser, doctors mm-hmm. of religious studies, tons of them, biblical scholars, tons of them. What no one saw until Joe Atwell comes along is that significant parts of the Gospels, as we've come to understand them, are more or less a direct rewrite of Josephus. What Joe also points out is that for hundreds of years, you know, you go back 500, 600 years ago, the Bible was distributed along with Josephus's War of the Jews book, because they saw it as, they obviously saw the connection, but they saw one as being supportive of the other. Then when we got to another point, we go, well, we don't really want to do that. So they separated them. But it is undeniable that what religious scholars, if you push them, will tell you, and the phrasing on this is interesting, is that the Gospels are dependent on Josephus. What they're saying is that it is most likely that the Gospel writers had access to, another code word, Josephus. What they're saying is they copied Josephus's historical account, but the key is they rewrote it as prophecy. So when Jesus is standing above Jerusalem and saying, they will come and they will, you know, they will raise the temple, you know, destroy it to the ground, and they will do this and they will do that, he is talking directly out of what Josephus writes. But they're calling it, the gospel writers are calling it prophecy. Josephus, when he wrote it down, is saying, I was there with him, this is what we did.
Written after the fact is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
Written after the fact. So, I guess that's enough of a Bible geeky. Happy to do another one on this. You get Jay. We'll come on. You can come on Skeptical. We'll do it another place. I'll bring on Atwell. Anyone who goes against any of that is just, there's no grounds for nothing I said is like super duper controversial. It's just Atwell's the first one to really put it together, and he's buddies with a bunch of biblical scholars. There's a bunch of Atwell haters out there. I've interviewed a bunch of them on the show too. Oh. It doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It's just the way that it is, because it's all written. You can read it right there. You can read Josephus. You can read the Gospels. They match up one for one. For hundreds of years, we always understood that one was dependent on another. No one took a step back and said, what the fuck does that mean that they're dependent on the other? I just did a show not too long on this. Why is the Bible pro-Roman? Think about it. Go back and look at that history. The Jews, their number one enemy was the Romans. The Romans were constantly on their ass. Uh-huh. They destroyed the city, the temple, once, twice. They were constantly, like they did everybody else, you know, had them under their thumb. Why does the Bible come out and say, give unto Caesar what is Caesar? Give, you know, it'd be like Trump coming out and saying, well, give unto Antifa what is Antifa's, you know? You'd be like, no, it'd more the case. It'd be like Antifa saying, give unto Trump what is Trump's. It'd be like Antifa saying, well, still pay your taxes, you know, pay your taxes. Or here's another one, is go the extra mile. You know what go the extra mile means? It's actually biblical. Oh. There was a law among the Roman military that if you were a citizen and you were there and you were watching the Roman troops, any one of those troops could say, hey, kid, come over here. Carry my backpack for a mile. And those backpacks are like super heavy, had all this crap in there, you know, 30, 40 pounds, you know. Carry it for a mile. What the Bible says is, don't carry it for a mile. Go the extra mile. Carry the Roman soldier's backpack an extra mile. Hmm. Why? Why? Why would Antifa saying, well, and don't just pay your taxes, pay 50% more just because, you know, we're fighting with them, but they're still good guys out there. It totally doesn't make any sense. It's scammy from the beginning. What it fits into more is what we're familiar with right now, which is it's a social engineering, social control project. It's a way of, these things aren't that, these things have been around forever because they're not that complicated. How do you control people? You know, you make them feel good over here, you make them feel scared over there, you kind of throw a few breadcrumbs on the ground and boom.
Interesting. Okay. Well, and we could talk about this for hours on end, and we're running out of time already. I will definitely be looking this up. I'm going to listen to those shows. You said you've got shows with Atwell talking about Josephus and this whole topic, right?
We'll do round two, man. You come on Skeptico.
Oh, you don't want that. I'm not even as educated on religion as Jay Dyer. So if if you stumped him at all, like, you're going to kill me. I'll just sit there and watch. Yeah, no, I'm, it's funny. I always talk about this. Like, it's funny that I dig so deep into the occult stuff and I don't spend nearly as much time reading about my own religion. You know what I mean? Like, it's just was the progression of how my life has gone. And, you know, I get it. I hear lots of good arguments against religion and against Christianity. Nothing's convinced me yet, but, you know, it's one of those subjects I'd like to learn more. I'd like to read about this Josephus and Atwell's book. So
I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know any of this stuff. Like I tell people, I didn't know anything before I did Skeptico. Yeah. You know, before I started interviewing people, talking to people, reading their books, I had absolutely no clue. No clue.
Well, okay. So last question, because we only got a few minutes left. In your new book, you've got a discussion on aliens and if they are good or evil. Okay. And that's like, I get that question a lot. And my take on it is, from a biblical perspective, of course, is it's like angels and demons, right? Like, it could be good, it could be bad, but like, I look at the, what do you say, when you look at the fruits of their labor, I look at the fruits and it's like, I don't know, man, if these aliens are here to try to save us from ourselves and they want to be these benefactors of humanity and all this stuff, like, why not just be out with it? Why this cryptic nonsense?
What are they waiting for?
What are you waiting for? Right. Like, so to me, it seems very trickster and hoaxster-ish, and that's what I talk about in my new book. But what I found curious, you have a chapter called Evil is a Lens. And when I read that, I read it as Evil is Aliens. A little bit of a Freudian slip. But anyway, what's your take on the alien spirituality, man? Do you think, or does this fit into your NDE spirituality consciousness thing where, you know, evil is more of a fabrication on some levels?
Well, I think it's super complicated, you know, like all this stuff is, and that's not just an out. It's like one of the things, bottom line conclusion is, why do we think the non-human intelligence is less complicated than our little scheming thing here? Probably is just as complicated. You know, as a starting point, maybe a point to kind of leave it since we can't get into it all the way. Anyone who wants to step over the alien thing, and when I say step over, all this stuff of, oh, it's all this metaphysical consciousness, another dimension, demonic, satanic kind of stuff. You know, the best way, one of the best ways from a scientific standpoint, like anthropological standpoint we have, is to look at cross cultures and cross time, you know. So you think something has happened, you know, you think eating disorders, you know, is like, oh gosh, that's a biological problem. And then you start looking at it across cultures and you go, oh, it doesn't look like it really is biological. It looks like it's something that our culture kind of cooked up with our advertising and our obsession with this or that. That's only a small example of when you start looking cross-culturally, a lot of times some of these things shake out. So I say, what happens when you look at the alien thing, ET, cross-culturally? One of my go-to sources on that is a woman I interviewed named Artie Sixkiller Clark. And she has kind of an unusual sounding name to us because she's a Native American. But she has all the right credentials. PhD, Montana State, professor at Montana State. She decides to write kind of an anthropological book on star people and whether they are, how they exist inside of these cultures. So she starts going and interviewing various Native American tribes, initially around her area in the West, but then has expanded it down to Mexico, Central America, other places. I mean, shit, Isaac, it's like all, they're just direct. They're like, yeah, they come from the stars. They have, our great ancestors told us this. These are their attributes. This is what they're doing. Some of them look like lizards. Some of them come in this kind of crazy. So if you want to step over all that data, you know, and say, oh, well, it's this or that, you can, but that's a pretty big hill you have to start climbing. You know, other people have said, yeah, you go over to Africa and some tribe that doesn't even have a language. I shouldn't say doesn't even have, because that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't know what they're doing. But they go, yeah, right there. See the Pleiades, that star system, that's where they come from. And that's why we put on these hats and we dance around for hundreds of years. And this is what they told us. And, you know, they told us there's a twin star up there that you can't see, you know. And then 50 years later, we put we finally have a telescope good enough to say, shit, there is a twin star there. So this is when people go to the, it's all demonic, it's all satanic. I'm like, I'm not shutting that down. I'm just saying you got a couple of hills you got to climb in terms of ET, non-human intelligence, before you can make that claim. So if you've incorporated all that stuff in, then I'm all ears. But if you haven't, if you're telling me every Native American or every Native group, they're all satanic, I mean, I guess you can make that claim, you know, throughout time, you know, they were all satanic, all satanic, all satanic. Man, that's starting to sound pretty cultish to me, you know.
All right, man. I like it. Okay. Yeah. These are big topics. The alien topic is a big one. And I think that as information unfolds, and hopefully it's not as vague as it's already shaping out to be, hopefully we can get a better understanding of it. And I appreciate you doing your show and getting into these topics, because there's not a lot of us talking about the idea of aliens with spirituality. There's a handful of folks. But I do appreciate you. I do have to let you go. We are out of time. I used up your hour.
Kumbato, we got to do this again. You know, we got to do this again.
Yeah.
So anytime you want to come on Skeptico, we'll do part two of this. I'd love to do that as soon as you're ready. And hats off to you. I mean, you got a new patron and a new avid listener, because I love what you're doing.
Man, I appreciate that. Coming from you, that's a huge compliment. I appreciate it. Finally, where can my audience get more of you, your podcast, your books? Where can I send them?
Skeptico with a K-O on the end.
Skeptico with a K on the end. Okay. I'll post the links in the show notes. And and finally, when's your new book going to drop?
You know, man, the publisher pulled it on me. I don't know why. I had a publisher and they dropped out. End of January, beginning of February, it'll be up.
All right.
You never know on those things. I don't want to claim shit that I don't know, but it was very strange.
Oh, that is strange. There's heavy censorship going on this year, man. There's and you got some ideas in there that I would suggest goes against some of the agendas they're trying to lay out on us.
You know, and I don't even think it has to work like a heavy. It can just be like, I don't want to go there. You know, just somebody goes, how is this? Which is, I think, the position they put a lot of people in, is just say, do I even want to go there? I just avoid the whole thing. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep. Too controversial, too hot for TV, right? All right, Alex. Appreciate you, man.
Right on, bro. You're awesome.
All right, thanks. We'll see you. Okay, what'd you think about that? Did he not drop some knowledge? Or was he dropping lies, heretical lies? So many things we need to research here, okay? This is going to be, he's going to be a controversial guest. I like Alex. We get along real well. And this is what it's all about, folks. Sharing information, not being offended, forcing us to take a second look at our own belief systems. That's what makes life beautiful, you know what I mean? That's the passion of life. You got to keep learning, keep evolving, keep doing better. Admit where you're wrong. I'm wrong. I'm wrong all the time. That's what we need to do. We need to check the ego. Get to get enlightened, get that rainbow light body action going. Get your alkaline OG granola woke status up. All right, if you want to check out Alex, you know where to go. Check him out on Skeptico. I got links in the show notes. I got a link to the show in specific, where we talked about the Bible with Joseph Atwill. I got a link in the show notes for that episode in particular, or you can just go check it out for yourself, skeptico.com. He's got a whole gang of podcasts. He's been doing this for a minute. He's got a book on Amazon. Another book will be coming out on Amazon here. January, February is what he said. So be on the lookout for that. And, hit him up. Tell him Isaac sent you. Tell him you like his thought process. You know what? Like, we don't have to agree. I don't agree with him.
That's okay. That's what this is all about. We got to flesh it out because no one else is going to do this. Everyone, all the masses, they're snowflakes. They can't handle this kind of argument. They can't handle it, so that's why they get pacified with superhero movies and mainstream media nonsense. That's why you come here to get the real truth. So thank you for your support. Appreciate you guys. And until next time, you know what to do. Stay woke.